Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
So friends, every day do something that won't compute.
This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This I command you, to love one another.
Love the Lord, love the world, work for nothing, take all that you have and be poor. Love somebody who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand.
You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that whatever you ask God in my name will be given to you.
Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed.
You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from God.
Children to go and to experience. Earlier this week, we were in our office, and I don't know what you think of when you think of an office, but for us, one of our offices is Old Soul Coffee House in Oak Park. It's a very cool office. It has brick all around, and I was there with Linda and with Anthony and Vanessa and little Anthony. So you can imagine when you're in an office like that, it's a little chaotic and things just kind of, you got to go with the flow. But Old Soul, there's something about it. It's a creative and beautiful space. It's a prophetic space, I would even say. We're seated there and we're working together on Pentecost, which is next Sunday, and we're dreaming about this summer worship series that we're calling Evolution of Church, where we're going to journey through the centuries with, we always like to talk in the church about we want things traditional, but what does that word mean to us? So we're going to look back at our tradition, like what has church meant to folks? Like with Miriam dancing after Exodus, is that traditional? Can we worship there? And we're going to try that this summer. So we were dreaming about it and thinking about it together. And seated right near us was Sean Harrison. And Sean is the founder and the co-director out at Soilborn Farms. And Sean was meeting there with someone, I don't know who. Soilborn Farm is committed to urban agriculture and to teaching people in the city about where our food comes from and to helping interrupt the agricultural systems that we take for granted and to find new ways of farming. So maybe Sean finds Old Soul inspiring too, and it's like an office for him sometimes. So we were gathering in that space, and Suzanne Eatsenton walked in, and Suzanne is a member of our community. She's a family physician at UC Davis, and so kind of everybody, it was just really fun to be in Old Soul at noon. Like our kitchen tables gather there a couple times a week, but it was just fun to be out in the world at this mission outpost office that's a coffee house. And Suzanne was introducing us and inviting us to a lecture that night. She wanted us to come to this lecture that was about food and agriculture. And it sounded really phenomenal, but it was one of those invitations where, you know, you're receiving the invitation, but at the same time you go, I know I'm not going to really make it tonight. And so that's what I was doing, was, oh, it sounds really great. I'm not going to really go. And so there was this man that was sitting there with her, and a couple of us got introduced to him, and I didn't really think twice about it. It was no big deal, but she was there with this guy. He was the lecturer. So she was having her office there as well. And then that afternoon, that evening, Eleanor and I went to pick up Sarah. And Sarah's a colleague with Suzanne, and she works in family medicine at UC Davis, too. And I pick up Sarah just like every day at the hospital, and Sarah is really excited. And one of the ways you know Sarah is excited is that she's sharing with me statistics. So in our family, the person who's going to know numbers, it's just me, like plain. That I'm the person who's going to go with the numbers, not Sarah. But she wanted me to know about these health disparities between wealthy and poor folks. And she just started quoting off the top of her head this lecturer who was so inspiring to her that day. So she talked about it all the way home. And I listened. You know how that is in partnerships, you go in that way. So we get home, and that night we get Eleanor to sleep, and we turn on HBO. And there is a documentary on that was phenomenal. It's called The Weight of the Nation. Has anybody seen The Weight of the Nation? Okay, some folks have checked into it. I was so moved right away. And about 4 minutes in, I'm thinking, this is really phenomenal, interesting, provocative stuff. And then Sarah looks and she goes, "That's him." So the guy that was at Old Soul, and then the person who was lecturing at UC Davis, now he's on our television. He's one of the main researchers with The Weight of the Nation, and he's talking to people about income inequality and disparities in healthcare, and how the two are tied together, and what in the world are we going to do to face this challenge as a country, as a world, or for us, what are we going to do to face this challenge? His name is Anthony Eaton, as a community of faith. And he's the senior vice president of Healthy Communities for the California Endowment. The film that we were watching was the fourth part of this series, and it's about challenges. And what it's looking at are the complicated ways in which the deck is stacked against us to be healthy people. The deck is stacked against us to be healthy in a variety of ways. So it looks at things like the agricultural system, evolutionary biology, food marketing. It looks at racial and socioeconomic disparities, the physical inactivity of folks in our country. And it helps us to see how the food industry and the beverage industry in particular shape policies that are really killing us, literally. And it's our issue and it's our issue. We've talked about that in this space before. So we're watching this, and there is Anthony. So I want to show you a clip from this video. It's just a short clip. The first person, the sound is not great, but I invite you to just watch and to listen here.
Obesity affects some communities more than others. That's true geographically, for instance, where the Southeast has a higher frequency than, say, Colorado.
The rates of chronic disease are much higher in low-income communities, and the rates of obesity related chronic disease are way higher.
Just the built environment that people live in, their access to nutritious food as opposed to things that are high in calories and relatively low in nutritive value.
It's systematically different in communities of color and communities with lower incomes.
Where you live matters, and it matters a lot. Another way of putting this is, does your zip code matter more than your genetic code? This is Baltimore, Maryland, where they have a census tract down near the Inner Harbor with a life expectancy of 62 years, and another life expectancy up in northern Baltimore, 82 years, a 20-year life expectancy difference. This is Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, where we thus far have found the greatest disparity in life expectancy. This is Huff, an inner city neighborhood with the average life expectancy of 64 years, and 8 miles down the road is Lyndhurst, with a life expectancy of close to 90 years. Understanding what drives that disparity is going to help us understand what is driving the chronic disease epidemic. It's going to help us understand the tools and strategies to get underneath the obesity epidemic.
When we talk about farm to table, and when we think about rooting our lives and growing in faith and reaching in love, we have to go to some of these hard places. And they're hard for some of us personally, and they're hard for all of us collectively as a people. This isn't just out there on the East Coast, it's right here in Sacramento as well. Maybe you saw the Sacramento Bee a couple weeks ago, April 20th, there was an article by a person named Grace Rubenstein. And she's writing about the disparities between 95819 and 95817. So right now, we're in 95819. Some of us made our way over here, a lot of us actually in this community, made our way over here this morning from 95817. Sarah and I lived there for several years and just moved to 95819. These are different neighborhoods. And she helps us to think about what is happening in those spaces and some of the inequalities that we experience between the two. And she writes it like this. Analysis performed by the nonprofit Valley Vision on behalf of local hospitals in 2010 showed that Oak Park residents are more than three times as likely to go to the emergency room for asthma, diabetes, or high blood pressure. They're also 50% more likely to go for heart disease, and their babies have a 30% higher chance of starting life with a low birth weight, an indicator of the mother's health and prenatal care, and a predictor of the newborn's health and survival. And the ultimate category that we track in terms of is life expectancy. At least that's the ultimate one to some folks. An East Sacramento resident is expected to live 3.5 years longer than someone in Oak Park. So zip code, as Anthony Eitan reminds us, might matter as much or more than genetic code when we start to think about these things. And if we're going to be real about reaching in love, we're going to actually have to look at some of this stuff. And it's not going to be pretty. It's actually going to be really hard at times. These neighbors, they're separated, were separated by a highway, yet a deep chasm, way bigger than a highway, actually separates these communities. And Jesus says it this way, after sharing a meal with his closest friends, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This I command you, love one another." In Jesus' day, this whole series in John, what's happening here is an emphasis on Jesus turning to wash the feet of his disciples. So he's literally taking the system that they knew and he's turning it upside down. See, in their day, you had landowners, the patrons, the people who controlled, and you had enslaved peoples. And Jesus takes this and turns it and says it's flat. All means all. All of God's people are to be loved as God loves us and as Jesus teaches us to love. See, you could say it like this. God reaches in love through Jesus by turning the world upside down, flattening it. Taking the disparities that we've just come to expect and that feel too broken and real to us and turning them upside down. So from a place of power, Jesus tells his disciples something radical in their day. You are my friends, not my slaves. Just a few chapters earlier, Jesus was talking to them about being servants. Still with himself in this image of master. Jesus' own theology is evolving at this moment. And he looks at them and says, you're no longer slaves. You're my friends. The Greek word that he uses there is philio. And you could literally translate friends there as loved ones. That is a really radical thing. If you think about the patron turning to the people who've been the enslaved people and saying, friends, loved ones. That's taking a system of oppression and dominance and turning it upside down and saying, we're not going to have it anymore. Not like this. And so when folks talk about loving Jesus, I think at the heart, that's the Jesus we love. But what we often don't go to is that Jesus doesn't just appoint those folks around him, he actually commissions them. So now go out and love as I have loved. Lay down your life for your friends. For loved ones. And he doesn't just say it to the disciples, he says it to all of us. See, that filial love is rooted in God's agape, God's unconditional love, God's all means all. Jesus invites his friends then to go out and to do exactly what he's done. So it's like, see people who've been treated as enslaved folks and see them as beloved loved ones. So what's that going to look like in our lives? What's that going to look like in your life? Wendell Berry says it this way. So friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love somebody who does not deserve it. We're in our last week of this series that we're calling Farm to Table, and we looked initially at how do we root our lives in grace? And then we looked last week at how do we grow in faith? And this morning we turn to Jesus' command to love one another. The language we use here in this community is reach in love. I think that's what Jesus is saying to his people right at this moment. It's the like, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. Anybody else like Friday Night Lights? This is Jesus' moments. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. And Jesus is saying that to his people, love one another, and sending them out in that way. Wendell Berry writes about me and about you and about himself and about everybody like this. Eaters must understand that eating takes place inescapably in the world. That is, it's inescapably an agricultural act. And how we eat determines to a considerable extent how the world is used. Does that make sense? Every time we consume something, every time we eat food, we are connected to God's world, to the earth. But how many times do we go through the day thinking about where did this come from? How were the folks treated who grew it? How was the earth treated as it was brought to my table? Most often we don't pause to think about that. Most of us, I would guess. He says that this is a simple way of describing a relationship that's inexpressibly complex. To eat responsibly is to understand and enact, so far as one can, this complex relationship. So what can we do? And he says, let's start here, and gives four kind of invitations. Participate in food production to the extent that you can. So try to grow a garden. See what happens. Some of us in this room are phenomenal gardeners and growers, and others of us really stumble around. I'll put myself in that category. He says, try it. I think if we're going to reach in love, it might be a place for us to start. And wherever we live or find ourselves, we can start by growing something. The second thing that he says is prepare your own food. This is radical. In a world that is so fast-paced, take time enough out in your day to actually make yourself a meal. I'm reminded of that now over and over as Eleanor gets up in the morning and she goes for the strawberries and she sits in the middle of the kitchen floor and eats them. And then an hour later, she's hungry and she wants to make pancakes. We could leave the room and our two-year-old could just go at pancakes and she'd be ready to go. Not sure it's the healthiest thing, but she is making her own food in that way. Wendell Berry says, start there. How many meals in our week are we actually preparing? Learn the origins of the food you buy, and buy the food that's produced closest to your home. Whenever possible, deal directly with a local farmer or gardener. This is a challenge, though, and I want to start with the challenge that's the personal one. The personal challenge related to food, and this affects maybe all of us, but for sure many of us in really hard ways. Just the idea of talking about food, our relationships with food, are challenging. They actually are destructive for many of us. Whether it's overeating or undereating, the ways in which we fail to love our bodies are enormous challenges that we have to look at together. U.S. Americans, this is a quote from The Weight of the Nation. Folks in the United States today are living longer and healthier than ever before, but the high rates of obesity among children as well as adults threatens to diminish these gains. So if we're going to reach in love, we might need to start right here. So for some of us, reaching in love may actually begin by caring for our own bodies, making healthy choices in relationship to food and to exercise. And I'll be honest, to do that, we're going to need to root our lives in grace, and to have folks around us who can support us and watch over us in love and care for us. Because we can't do that by ourselves. I can't do that by myself. That's why we have kitchen tables. That's why we gather together in those ways, is to encourage and challenge one another. See, the personal dimension when we talk about food or agriculture, and we could not go there in a series from farm to table, the personal dimension is hard, it's real, and it's debilitating for too many of us. But so are the structural dimensions of this. It's not just a personal choice thing. It's how the entire system is set up working against us. Here again are some statistics and some quotes from The Weight of the Nation. After World War II, our American agricultural system, we started to introduce new inputs, fertilizers. And what happened as soon as we started to do that and we started to subsidize corn and soy, everything that we produced became much less expensive because the cost was picked up by the government. And so food prices went way down for things that you can make cheap, like chips. Why does it cost more to eat a fresh strawberry grown right here than it costs to eat a bag of potato chips? That's crazy. But it does because of the policies we have people have put in place over time and how you and I have been complacent in it. Maybe you could say we've become enslaved to it and we don't know how to see it or to get out of it. The abundant and cheap ingredients that have stimulated this new economy of food, what they create are ways in which everything that we eat now is based on corn and soy. Look at the things that we're eating and what's put inside of them. It's hard to look at sometimes. I was with Sarah. I don't see Sarah here today. But I was with Sarah, and we went to a place called Sarah Tarbe, not Sarah Marshall. We went to a place called Red Robin. And the guy at Red Robin must have asked us 27 times, if he asked us once, would you like more fries? I think I consumed like 2,000 calories at this meal, and I was turning down this guy multiple times. It's cheap for them to make these things. It's just more corn and soy that we're going to fry some stuff up and give to you and keep you happy in that space. It's tragic, really, and it's hard how difficult it is that this is all stacked against us in these ways. See, fruits and vegetables, they're not subsidized. So if you're going to eat fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, you're going to pay more. And that should not be. Since the 1970s, the price of fruits and vegetables has increased higher than the rate of inflation, making them even more expensive relative to processed foods. In The Weight of the Nation, they show, and I've lived in the Bronx for a little while, they show some young people going into this little store, and inside this place, you get a 25-cent bag of chips right there. But they sell that same bag of chips about 4 miles away in a wealthier neighborhood for 75 cents. They just take the 25 cents off and they increase it there. These are not real costs that we're bearing in these ways. It's crazy making when you think about it, when you look at it. And farmers like Wendell Berry and folks in this very room are doing their best to subvert that system, to say no. We're not going to go this way. It's kind of like, to me, the way that Jesus turned the world upside down in his day, saying, patrons and slaves, no more. Friends, beloved, loved ones. That's how we're going to relate to one another. But that is hard, hard work. And it takes some folks among us making hard choices to eat differently. And it takes some work of some of us in this space actually turning from the vocations that we have to say, we're going to really start growing things. We're going to give up this way of life to find this other way of life. We're going to see in this next clip from The Weight of the Nation some farmers. They're from Iowa. The first person you won't be able to hear, he's actually really eloquent, and he speaks about the challenges and the hope that local sustainable agriculture has to offer. And then we'll see some Iowa farmers sitting around a table talking about how some of the decks are stacked against them. So let's watch.
As the local food movement grows, then you will create the confidence that, yes, we can move from this industrial food system to something that's fundamentally different.
Is there enough local product out there to really fulfill the demand for all of us? What if all the universities, all the hospitals, all the school systems started asking for small farmer food.
Sure.
Are there enough small farmers to go around to do it?
Not today. Not today. The answer would be no, not today. There aren't enough small farmers to adequately fulfill the pipeline.
We have people who are demanding fresh fruits and vegetables, and we have farmers eager to grow them. The problem, I think, is scaling up and having government programs support that. So why are these programs not changing?
Politically, no one's going to touch that.
And we can never really have a truly good policy as long as we're worrying about a commodity group influencing the policy more than our interest in food.
They have the wherewithal to encourage lawmakers to do what they're doing. We do not.
Maybe we just don't have enough of a voice within American agriculture to make that shift happen.
This country enough fruits and vegetables to be able to even meet the dietary recommendations of this country.
I think that young farmer in Iowa, his words about we don't have the voice that they have, you know, I think that maybe is what the folks sitting around Jesus were talking about when they were in that space. We don't have the voice to change the empire. It's all built in this way. We can't do that. And then Jesus gives them this radical act that says, I'm no longer going to see you as enslaved peoples, but as beloved friends. And he does it around a meal. And then he says, go and do likewise. So what are we going to do? Because remember, around that meal, Jesus welcomed the very person who was going to betray him three times that night. He says, all are welcome. We sing that. All are welcome. All means all. But it's not this like nice, politically correct, all means all. It's not that at all. It's Jesus saying to the folks around him, God's love is for all of us. I'm going to be denied by Peter. Welcome. All means all. That's where that lives for us. And when we live in that deep place of grace, we cannot help but reach in love. And this text is tough for some folks like me that want to have a more open interpretation with Scripture. Jesus actually says, you'll be my friends if. I don't like that if. I like the all means all. What do you mean if? If we reach in love. And for me, that's like, Jesus is saying, you are going to always have choices in your life that are moving towards love and beauty and justice, and you can turn away from those. And as you do that, you're becoming less beloved friend to me, and I'm calling you back over here. It's not turning away from you, but it's saying you're turning away from me and from our ways. That happens in friendships. And Jesus is there calling us back to what is beautiful and just and hopeful. And that's what this looks like in some places. I want to share, there are neighborhoods here in Sacramento and other places where kids cannot find space for parks. And so we have schools that are staying open after school when that last bell rings so that kids can hang out there during the day because there aren't green spaces. We have in suburbs where there are more cars than people in homes. We have some people that are making radical choices to not drive all of their vehicles to the school, but to walk a walking school bus to say, we're going to try something different. Can you imagine if you were in the suburbs? I think of Rockland. Like if I'm driving down the street in Rockland and there's everybody just walking to school. We don't think twice when we see a yellow school bus coming by. Why would we think twice if we saw a walking school bus coming by? Because it turns things upside down, that's why. In New York City, you can stop anywhere and pick up chips or a hot dog or anything you want. What some folks started to do a couple years ago is they worked with farmers and now they push around green carts So you can walk up to that cart, instead of buying high fructose corn syrup, you can actually get some strawberries when they're in season. That's unsettling if you're walking down the street in New York. I don't expect to see blueberries in the Bronx. I wanted chips. But maybe that's what subversive love of Jesus actually looks like. Maybe that's what it looks like to turn things upside down and say, not slave, but friend, beloved, loved one. These are simple and sacred acts that people of faith, people in this world, are doing to love their neighbors. Can you imagine a community of faith here in Sacramento reaching out in love around some of these issues? A community of faith that says the disparity between 95819 and 95817, that's not okay. And in the years ahead, we're going to figure out how we're going to be part of transforming that. Not part of the problem, but part of transformation. And we don't know exactly how that's going to look because this is enormously complicated. And the reality is each of us around this space are coming from different places. And so what it looks like for you to reach in love and the person next to you is going to be different. For some of us, it might mean caring for our bodies every day as a place to start. So for me, an example for me right now is I tend to eat fairly intentionally and healthy. But there are days in my week where I do not eat vegetables. So how am I going to make sure every single day I eat vegetables, not fruit? I love fruit. I could eat a ton of fruit. But vegetables from a local farm right around here. Every day, how am I going to do that? And I know some of us are soda drinkers. So how am I every day going to cut one soda out of my day? How am I going to turn away from them, period? I know that's impossible for some of us, okay? Maybe for a lot of us. And so it's going to take people around us helping us and supporting us. And what are we going to have in its place? What could that look like? What could that be like? Maybe it's going to mean for some of us asking really hard questions about the food in our workplace. Where does it come from? Or the food at Sac State? Why is it that we get these meal cards and most everything that we can have access to is junk? What if we stood up in some of our classes, we take nutrition classes, and then we walk out with the card and get junk food and slide it by? Really? What would it look like for us as students at Sac State to say, nope, that's not how we're going to be together? What would it look like for you to ask questions about the children in our neighborhoods, in your neighborhood, about the food that they have at schools? I think if we start to go that way, we start to follow Jesus toward asking those hard questions about how are we going to see the people around us as loved ones, friends, and that's where we're called to go. For some of us, rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love means that we literally turn our lives upside down. We take our MIT degree and we put it in the desk drawer and we leave it behind because every day we put on boots and we go out to a field and we work on tending vegetables. That's upside down. That makes some parents nervous. Maybe proud. Maybe proud. We're going to go out to one of those farms this afternoon, to Feeding Crane Farms. And we're going to spend time there celebrating the move from field to table and all that God is doing in our lives. 60 of us are going to gather together. I was there a couple months ago, about 5 months ago, walking around with Antonio. And that land has been in this family for a long, long time. And what I saw was just an open field like any other. And I don't know fields. This one had grass, it had dirt, had some trees, some horses down the way. And I know when we go out there this afternoon, what you're going to see are beautiful rows of greens growing. It is stunning. It's stunning to think that that place did not look like that at all. It's like when we turn the lights off and then we turn them back on. That's what we're going to experience out there. So get a good picture in your head of a blank field before you make your way out to the farm this afternoon. And be prepared to see a surprise that will turn you upside down. Feeding Crane Farms is a special place that's taking this thing that's been there forever and transforming it into something that God seeks to inspire and to love folks out in the world, here in 95819 and over in 95817 and beyond. In a moment, we're going to gather around the table. We're going to share in a simple and sacred meal. This is how Jesus called folks to love one another and to abide in his love. When we see that table, can we see the farm that makes it possible? Can we remember all of those relationships? Can we hear the call to reach in love coming from there? Wendell Berry is often asked, what can city folks do? I'm not going to turn my backyard into a farm. I'm not going to sell all I have and go be poor. That's rubbish. That's just to write down. It's beautiful poetry. That's where Jesus calls us to reach in love. And Wendell Berry says, start by eating responsibly. Eating is an agricultural act. Know the food that you eat, where it comes from, how it came to you, and for that, give thanks. May this simple meal that Jesus calls us to share together inspire us and call us to live out of deep questions and to reach in love from farm to table.
This I know was true. Leaves don't drop, they just let go and make a space for seeds to grow. And every season brings a change. A tree is what a seed contains, to die to live his life's refrain.